I might have to put my hat in the ring for that Blackstone Fortress complete set.
Spike scan initiated. I'm picking up a podcast arriving. Wait. Designation: Forge the Narrative.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host. I'm joined tonight by Tandy Gates.
Hi, everybody.
And Adam Camilleri.
Evening.
We are the Bell of Lost Souls podcast. Thanks for joining us. We got some cool stuff to talk about today. I subscribed to Warhammer Plus.
Yeah, it's launch day for it, isn't it? Big deal. It's been 6 months they've been leading up to this, or has it been even longer?
It feels like it's been a while, although, you know, time is relative. It seems to blend nowadays.
At the moment, yeah. It's just like a blur.
I will say, though, that I don't know if it's demand on the servers or, you know, some growing pains or what have you, but I had to go and subscribe, and I don't mind telling people how I did it just in case they're having the same issue. Is I had to go in and subscribe to the annual upgrade my Warhammer app subscription through my Apple ID, like going into my settings and then Apple ID, and then because I use an iDevice. I mean, obviously, if that wasn't evident from the story they're telling, and then go to subscriptions and then upgrade my subscription from there. And then once I did, I was then able to go into the website and select that sweet Vindicare Assassin is my annual reward.
Was going to ask which one you chose. Is that going to be, so a lot of people have been saying that that piece is too nice to actually use in game and they're just going to sit it on their shelf, which I think it's perfect for, but surely you can find a way.
I have to imagine that. Now, granted, I don't know anything about there or whatever, but I have to imagine that the Vindicare is probably something you could put on a base by itself.
Like, you know, like a display, like one of the character series from Horus Heresy. Surely it just comes on a base as well.
Maybe. It's got the diorama. Or it's plastic or something that you can fiddle with it. But no, I probably would not want to play with that on the table, but who cares? It's gorgeous.
Well, I just think like Armies on Parade, if you want to just get a head start on your Armies on Parade for next year, just have like, do some cool blood effects, you know, a Tau Ethereal or something, getting it through the eyeball and your Vindicare up on the pulpit. It sounds cool.
I think it would be kind of cool to like write a scenario where you could use that as a piece of the scenario.
Oh, yeah.
Like maybe it sits that's outside cool. of each other's lists, but it interacts with both lists in some way.
Or like a 500 point game, like a combat patrol game to where you're having to get into this bunker or something before the... takes your whole squad out.
Neither player is playing an Imperial army, and at the start of each player's command phase, the Vindicare goes off, and it's controlled by whoever's command phase it is. And so you get to use it on your opponent, then they get to use it on you, then you get to use it on your opponent. That's sick.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
Oh, I smell a crusade brewing.
Where's Red? Right.
Yeah, I know, right? Oh my goodness, though. This sounds so. Anyway, the model's gorgeous, and there's a lot of, you know, with the Auric. I mean, I saw lots of people talking about they wanted to kitbash or convert that thing into a war boss or just use it for Age of Sigmar. I mean, there's no way I wasn't picking that Vindicare.
We just got an Orc book. And a lot of people, unlike previous books or unlike a lot of other books that have come out recently, there's quite a bit of hobby lag on this book. So people are needing, you know, more war bosses, more, you know, Beast Hunter boys and whatever squig duty waters.
Squigasaurus.
That's correct.
Can I just say I love orky names. Like every time I'm looking through my codex and I have to say Rucka Truck Squig Buggy, I just chuckle a little bit inside.
It is the Sloppy Bile Piper effect. I'll point it out because everyone sloppy like when they came out, everyone couldn't stop saying it.
Yeah.
Like, what unit are you taking? Sloppy Bile Piper. Why are you taking it? Because I get to say Sloppy Bile Piper.
Yeah, because there's two in the list, and I want to say it twice, and I want you to say it twice. I don't want you to ask me about him constantly. So I did see. So I was fortunate enough they previewed Old Belli actually at the U.S. Open in Orlando.
That was quite clever, isn't it? I've watched it now as well, and it hit the spot.
It's got a style to it. Tanya, have you seen it yet? I don't necessarily spoil anything.
I have seen it. Yeah.
Okay.
I loved it.
Well, if anybody's listening, it was up available for everyone to view this past weekend, and it's one of the Hammer and Bolter things you can watch through the Warhammer Plus app now, and I thought it did a good job of trying to thread that needle between someone who doesn't know a thing about orcs and Yarik and, you know, putting in Easter eggs for those of us that know a lot about those characters.
Oh my gosh. Speaking of Easter eggs, did you see the squig hair on that runt herd? It had little eyes that would like move around. It was fantastic.
We've talked about this on the show before. Little known fact about orcs is that they can't grow hair of their own. So any hair on an orc is a hair squig.
It's hair squig.
So yeah. Good. Toupee squigs.
Yeah.
You just think about the social connotations. It's fantastic.
Think about the old goth rockers with their mohawks or whatever.
Just imagining, like, you know, 9-foot war bosses talking about getting their weave that weekend and what style they're going to go for this battle.
Eyebrows on fleek.
Yeah, exactly. Love it.
It's in a different kind of animation style. It's not, you know, one thing, one genre or another. And it's also telling a story. And, you know, I liked it. I thought it was hard for me to put the perspective of someone that may be viewing this content, this stuff about orcs, this stuff about this particular Astra Militarum character for the first time. And then once I kind of like shifted my mind to view that perspective, I started kind of, you know, understanding what they were trying to do, at least with this particular episode.
Yeah. Is that the tale for Hammer and Bolter? They're not going to have many series. I think they were saying they were going to have up to like three, you know, two or three episodes to tell a single story, but then they're going to be moving on. They're going to be paying a lot of homage and talking about a lot of the mythical and amazing stories because they've got 30 years of content. So it's not like that well's going to go dry anytime soon for like single episode or double episode content.
There's three episodes out right now. One's called Death's Head, which, you know, the thumbnails don't necessarily lend themselves to spoilers, but when you hear old Bell Eye, you know, most of us know who that is. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, somebody might. And then there's another one called Bound for Greatness. There's three episodes out right now in the Hammer and Bolter. Looks like one's about the Death's Head's, at least about an Inquisition story. And I hear it gets deep, but I haven't watched it yet. I'm gonna binge these this weekend.
Yeah, and that's really the deal, isn't it? Like a lot of people have worried about the depth of content. Like, are they going to have enough? Because, you know, you could literally watch Netflix 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and you're watching something different, you know, every time. You might not be enjoying yourself because you probably get bored out of your brains. But
well, what you probably did was you scrolled for 2 hours and then realized you had to go and do whatever you were doing to kill time before.
Scrolled for 2 hours, watched 20 minutes or something, realized you didn't like it that much, scrolled for another hour and a half, found something else. Yeah, yeah.
And you had to go to work.
But,
yeah.
But you know what I mean? These things are generally built off the thing that, like, they're a self-contained thing.
And yeah.
The library is endless. And so a lot of people have been talking about whether or not there's enough content there to warrant the service. And I believe there is, especially when they talked about opening up things like past White Dwarf entries in addition. So it's not just like a streaming service. It's a pretty much a holistic program. And I think that's a very good thing by GW. That's very clever because the modes of consumption we have for media, especially in our game, stretch far and beyond like visual medium, stretch far and beyond. You know, people consume this game and their products in so many different ways. Trying to create a streaming service that just had that one stream of content, I think would have been a mistake as well.
Some of the stuff is evergreen. Like what's up there right now is a couple of masterclass painting tutorials. And I watched the one on faces and Louise is amazing. I mean, she, I don't know if you follow her on Twitter, but her use of like color and design and just talent is just,
she's one of the heavy metal painters, yeah?
I don't know if she does that or not. She's just an amazing painter. I don't know if she may even be beyond heavy metal.
I mean, I think she was part of the heavy metal team, but at the same time, I know she is one of like the main artistic people behind the art for the old world stuff that's coming up. So like, and not only can she paint miniatures, she is an artist. So like she can paint and draw and all that stuff. So she's incredible.
What they do in this tutorial on faces, I have never seen in another tutorial. And I've watched, as you know, if you listen to the show, I'm a like tutorial fiend. I go through and I watch a bunch and I find, you know, what speaks to me, what I think I can replicate or give me, you know, give me the outcome that I want. And so I've seen a bunch of them. And I've never seen anything like the tutorial that she does for faces. And so if they, you know, continue that type of style with paint tutorial, I think there's a huge value there. You do get access to like you're talking about the backlogs of White Dwarves and that content, if that's something you're into. And looking at the old miniatures and old battle reports and some of the old articles are really fabulous. And then you get the app. So it's all, I think the value's there.
Yeah, that's fair. And we'll wait to see how it develops. But yeah, it's up now. If you're interested, go jump on it.
Right. So with the, I don't know what the release schedule, I know nothing, very little about the release schedule of what they plan on doing and that kind of stuff, as far as like when we're going to get new episodes in the app. But I think it's when you look at it as all of the, well, I'm not going to tell anybody how to like subscribe or spend their money or whatever. But I think once you look at it, like, well, I get the app. So I got the place where I'm keeping all my codexes that I'm getting and stuff. Mm. And then I've got this animation thing I can go to every now and then, these painting tutorials and these White Dwarfs and other printed content or digital content that I can check out whenever I want.
And if you're going to sign up now, guys. Like, GW is making it really appealing to jump on this thing early. Like, you get 2 months free, you get a free miniature, you get all these added bonuses. And I'm assuming, like, you know, if this thing survives and goes the distance a couple of years from now, there's going to be some really nice perks for people who jumped on early. So yeah, if you're even curious, it's not a bad thing to, what I think it's £60. £60
for the 60 US dollars.
60. Oh wow, so it's less than £60. So yeah. I think it's 100 Australian dollars, which is about £60 or give or take. Oh sorry, 60 USD give or take. Eagle dollars. And
freedom bucks.
Yeah. Well, over here, yeah, that Vindicare would cost $60 Australian.
Exactly right. It'd be easy $50, $45 miniature.
Yeah, exactly. And then you get the 2 months off. So really, like, you're paying $40 for the year's service when you take the 60. Well, for as Australian, when you take the $60 out for the miniature, for you guys, you're probably paying like $25-$30. For the service, that's a pittance compared to some of the. I mean, I'll speak from my partner right now. I don't get Netflix or whatever because my partner has all of them. Everyone has that friend in the group that just has every single one of them. You know, she has Disney, Amazon, you know, KO, all of it. She's got all of it. And so, you know, I don't mind buying one. Yeah. Who knows? She might even watch some of it with me.
She might learn some. You might make a fan of Yarik out of her.
Who could not be a fan of Yarik? Like, nobody, at no point was he anybody, is he anybody's like hated character.
unless you're an orc player.
Oh, but they love him. Right? He's like the guy you can count on for the best scrap. You know, he's your best friend.
There you go.
Yeah.
He's everyone's.
Look, I am an apologetic fanboy of this, of things in general, Warhammer things in general. But I think the service is cool when you factor in all the miniature. The things we just talked about. So, people make their own decisions, of course. But.
I think I'm waiting to see, because I haven't signed up yet. It was only launched this morning for us over here. And I literally haven't had a chance to scratch my back yet. I'm going to check it out. I'm going to suss it out. Maybe it's right up my alley. I am waiting to see how the technical stuff goes. That's pretty much what the only real things that I've heard people having concerns about, just because the last couple of things GW have launched, they've taken a couple of days to get the patching together and to get things running really smoothly. And that's not a big deal. That happens with, I mean, you think about some of the video games that have come out recently. If people want to naysay on GW for that kind of stuff, you know, think about Cyberpunk and so many, many, many games coming out that are just like, I don't know, underdone.
Not to excuse anything, but I'm sure they were bombarded with people trying to get in, get that miniature that they've been hyping up.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, for sure, man.
So I did mention briefly the Orlando Open. I hope you guys could check it out on Twitch. Did some commentary for the Warhammer US Open Orlando Grand Tournament for Warhammer 40,000.
Yeah, it was 8 games, yeah? Was it 9 games?
8 games, yeah.
No mean feat by our man here, Paul. That's a good 27 hours, give or take.
Give or take a couple hours, yeah.
a couple under. You know, you always want to tee up a night game here or there. Night or custode game here or there. just to get that breather in. Around midday, you know, go straight into lunchtime off like a nice hour and a half game. Feels pretty good.
Well, for the folks that came and checked us out in chat and stuff and contributed, thanks a lot for that. It means a lot. And, you know, curious what people think. If they get a chance to watch it on the replays, I think it's still up on the official Warhammer TV Twitch right now.
I went back and watched it.
I thoroughly enjoyed the commentary. I thought that you and Nick had, like, really great chemistry together, and you made it exciting and yet still, like, accessible for people who are maybe not, like, masters at the game yet. So it's good.
That's the neatest thing. It's like people are like, what's the charge phase? You know, like, okay, let's talk about it.
Exactly right. And that's what a lot of things why I'm huge on the streaming, and I know everyone else is, so the commentary, I'm sure that's not going to surprise anybody. But the access it gives us to new players joining the scene, or new people just coming in and just picking up a Horus Heresy novel or something, and, you know, finding something they love in this medium, I think it's fantastic and should be supported.
Yeah, and then plus you get to see some cool games. And like, we get to see some top-level play, which, you know, tournament's been kind of in short supply recently, so that was cool.
I know Paul echoes me like this, but you really do feel like you've got the best seats in the house when you're the commentator, and it's like just a great game, great spectacle going on.
It really, especially, so when you see people pulling off some things, some maneuvers, like, you know, what Red talks about is, you know, moving with intent and some things, and then you can kind of, looking back with an analytical mindset, I mean, you know when they've got to risk it, and then when it pays off for them, it's very exciting. Mm. And
yeah,
and hopefully we communicate that when we're doing this kind of thing.
You guys did magnificently.
Yeah, I just want to talk about that. See, again, thanks people for that did come out and check it out and contribute in the chat, because it keeps things lively. People asking questions and talking about stuff. And I'll also say thanks for the comments on last week's episode. That was a heavy one. And that have chimed in with their opinions, because, you know, we express different opinions on the show.
Absolutely did. I mean, me and Red had a nice, and Tanya as well, we all had a nice little back and forth about it. I like to stay on the right side of things, of the public opinions when I can, but that was good. That was
Submarine
nice
Captain Camilleri.
No, it was nice to be challenged. It was nice to, you know, these are things that I have done personally, and I relate to both sides of the street, both in feeling justified in my actions towards how I think I'll enjoy the game more, as in what will enhance my enjoyment, but also, you know, having to be bigger than that and take into the account the reputation of the game, the integrity of the scene, and yeah, so many other things to contribute to now.
I promise, and we've actually had a conversation in this pre-show, next episode we're going to talk about culture crafting.
Why are we doing it next episode, mate?
Next episode.
Is there like some milestone or something?
Is going to be episode 400 of FTN.
Oh, outrageous.
Crazy.
Unless I've got my math wrong, this is 399. The one you're listening to right now. Next episode would be 400. I thought it'd be a great time to talk about this kind of stuff. So I don't want to spoil anything, but basically, if your system allows for certain things, those things are going to happen. And, you know, the frequency is up to the individual people, I guess, but, you know, kind of make some decisions. And we're going to talk about how to inform those decisions.
Yeah, it's an episode I've been excited about for, I don't know, a year. We've been like talking about doing this episode.
It does feel like a while.
Yikes.
But, you know, maybe as we can get to a state where, you know, it's easier to plan these types of things, and it's people want to get out and can get out, then, you know, maybe we put this stuff into as food for thought. So if anybody has any questions about that or has some things that they're struggling with, let us know either in a private message on the Facebook page or Twitter or anywhere, really. You can, or Instagram, you can reach us, and we'll try to get it in on that show next week.
Well, yeah, look, anybody who's, you know, playing this game is part of some kind of culture, some kind of gaming culture. And so, yeah, there's probably tons of people out there who have questions. Throw them in. We'd love to hear them. Love to talk about them.
And even if there's just things you would prefer to see that you don't have in your area, but you think might be cool, you know, like,
yeah, Red, how do I encourage this? Paul, what makes this better than this? Yeah, perfect.
Yeah, like, it's some of the things we get is like, I'm looking to build this type of group out, or I want to have I want to make sure that the play area or group or club is accessible to this style of player or whatever. Like, those are all great questions.
Absolutely.
And we hope to address them.
I'm just thinking about topics I want to bring up already. And yeah, there's a multitude.
Yeah. So we'll preface all the disclaimers and preface will come in the next episode, but teed up, let us know. Do you want to talk about, like, you know, anybody building Thousand Suns or Grey Knights out there?
I'm absolutely keen for them. I've been talking to friends of mine. Some of them, unfortunately, having to play on, you know, I've got some friends playing on TTS at the moment, because that's the only way they can engage in the game.
Well, you guys are on lockdown again, right?
We're in lockdown again. And then I've got some other mates up north in Australia, in Queensland, who've just, like, business as usual, and they're playing, like, 3 or 4 games a week, and I'm so jealous! My God! Because I haven't actually had a game of Warhammer in almost 3 months, maybe more than 3 months, and that just feels yuck. But yeah, I've got mates playing T-Suns, like mono T-Suns, and they're talking about, hey, my psychic phase now is so utterly sad it was going to be this good. They're talking about, like, doing 25, 30 plus mortal wounds a psychic phase and just being like, oh, you know, two turns if you don't, you know, try and line a sight me or don't have something to, you know, rhinos to soak or, you know, some way to interact with my psychic phase. If you're just like, it's just like Necrons versus
sitting there
T-Suns,
waiting to be reaped.
They just, yeah, exactly right, man. They just get up, they get on with that nice, juicy, like 24, 12 inch band wraith, and they're just like, mortal, 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 mortal. And it sounds savage.
I played a friendly game actually against a friend. He's like kind of new to the game, but he plays Thousand Suns. And so he just built a list of things that he thought like were going to be fun, right? And I had heard like the rumblings of the mortal wounds and stuff. So I deployed very defensively against it, but man, it's still sort of like, it still was kind of shocking. Like the output that the Thousand Suns actually have, like you do really have to be careful how you deploy. You cannot be super aggressive with your like heavy damage dealers, cause you will lose them.
Well, I think T-Suns and Grey Knights are both being built very cleverly by G-Dub, but we're not seeing things from these two books like Drakari, like Admech, where they just feel like they have it all. Like you can play like Admech, you can play melee, you can play shooting, you can play horde, you can play MSU. You can just kind of build it wherever you want. And I think T-Suns and Grey Knights are a bit more nuanced than that. T-Suns, they have, you know, bar none, hands down, best psychic phase in the game. They will do more mortals than like two other armies put together. Times two, even, you know, if you really build to it. But by doing that, they lean heavily on what we, you know, we used to call Hero Hammer Pull, like in Distance Gone Past, which leaves them exposed to things like secondaries like Assassinate, Abhor the Witch. It means their board control is a little, you know, more compromised. They can't really spread out and do a lot of things. They've got to be chained to bodyguard units and things to keep them safe. And so it enables you to have a to kind of pull the web apart if you're built to do it, you know. But the fact is, they're so potent and so powerful, you kind of have to account for them.
If you shoot your shot and miss, then you're picked up.
You just get smited to death. It's too bad, so sad. But at the same time, when we have that web that T-Suns are built around, because we talk about armies being good at, you know, certain phases. T-Suns don't have a super-powered melee. They don't have a super-powered melee unit. If you've got 10 Scarab Occult Terminators, chuck the buffs on them, cool, they're Terminators, they're going to smash. But they're so expensive that they can't take a multitude of them. And at the same time, 5-man's... you know, don't give you a huge return for the benefits, and you only take 3 squads of them in your army. If you want to double and triple down on them, you don't have those small units of Termes like the Dark Angels do with their command squads, or like the Death Shroud do for Death Guard, which are the two other, you know, Terminator wielding factions we got out there. And so they kind of walk in this tightrope between, I need to get close enough to slaughter you with mortal wounds, but then not let you get ultra aggressive into me, because I can't respond to that en masse apart from smiting myself out. And so, like you said, Paul, if you shoot your shot and you kill like 2 or 3, you know, damage dealers, that's a lot of their potency gone, because those same characters I was just talking about are their smite dealers, which they're their buffers and debuffers, and they're also their best melee options as well a lot of the time. So
you're talking about what are they packing for characters? Because I think you want to layer in a bunch of characters to get that Cabalic ritual number really high every turn.
Exactly right. Yeah, people are talking about, I think 15-16 is the minimum people want to go if they want to go mono T-Suns. Pushing 20 plus on your Cabalistic ritual is probably the way to go. But then that means like Ahriman, 2 or 3 Exalted Sorcerers, and then for every Exalted Sorcerer, you can take a Baby Sorcerer as well. So then there's 2 or 3 of those in there. And then you can still do a beefy badass Demon Prince, no problems.
Man, why are they getting all these points, man?
Exactly. I just reeled off like Ahriman and 3 Exalteds and then a couple of Smalls, and there's like a third-year army right there.
An Exalted Sorcerer on a disc is 125 points.
Look, it's very good. It's very good now. It's not bad in combat. It's very quick. Decent amount of wounds. Good saves. The amount of casts they can do now, the amount of psychic powers they can know and cast with all the Cabalistic rituals and all the buffs and stuff is pretty significant. But yeah, I really feel like T-Suns are like they're the one that's sitting on that little, like I said, they're walking the tightrope at the moment between, you know, how many HQs and how many heroes you can have and still have enough to play the game, to play the missions and stuff. Mm-hmm. Because yeah, damage is all well and good, but you know, damage doesn't win you, you know, one guardsman on an objective at the right time gives you a 5 and then a 15. It doesn't matter if you slaughtered them, they're still going to win.
Tanya, what else did your buddy have in their army, if you remember?
So he did have like the big blob of Scarab Cult Terminators, which are no joke. I was playing orcs and I just decided to just kind of like ignore wherever I could and sort of use line of sight blocking to like not get shot to death. He actually brought 2 Hellbrutes and, 2 units, like 2 small units of Rubrics. And what else did he bring? He did bring Ahriman. And 2 exalted sorcerers, I think.
No, oh, he was. He's like, yeah, let's play this friendly game, but also let me have 13 ritual points.
It was just in 1,500 points. Oh, and 2 units of cultists.
I'm kidding, of course. Like sometimes you just don't know.
It's such a thing for T-Suns players, though. They only got like 9 things in their book, so you can't really complain when they just take those 9 things. But at the same time, it is what it is.
Well,
hey, you know what? I will say this: I did okay. I did okay for me with the orcs. So you know,
I looked at these Zangor and Lighten. Those are the ones on the Zangors on the disc. A unit of 3 is only 54 points.
Now I'm a. We talked about this in our little chat, and I'm a big fan of these because they bring something to the table that you can't really get anywhere else, which is speed, which is dynamics, which is the ability to go turn 1 or turn 2, be in your deployment zone, and actually add some pressure there. Because the way I see, if people are actually really worried about T-Suns, the way I see it going is you do something like, oh yeah, well you'll just take like a Rhino or an Impulsor, chuck the 5+ against some mortals on it, and then you got to put 20. You got to put 20 mortal wounds on this thing to kill it, give or take. You know, probably 15, 16 mortal wounds, yep. And that's like. That's like 2/3 of their psyche phase just neutered by this right. One model.
Dang.
that you don't care about. You know, you're like, oh, cool, you killed it, whatever. And so things like the Enlightened that can put pressure on them where they live, disrupt their lines, make them spread out, make them even force them into range of your stuff. I feel like it's a really good play.
Well, what we saw, you know, if you go back and watch some of those games at the Orlando Open, we saw having to trade basically to cost your opponent a turn while you were getting some of your other things in position, and having some cheap little units without. Really compromising the bulk of your force. Like a buddy asked me for a list and I threw together. I mean, I don't know if this is probably not friendly. So take this for what you will, but 3 exalted sorcerers, 3 units of Rubric Marines. I have a unit of Scarab Terminators in here, but I'm actually not sure about them because of, I think just point for point, more Rubrics are better. But then when I got down and wanted to buy my 4th Rhino, you know, I essentially ran out of points. But then a couple of the, you know, the tried and true Contemptor Dreadnoughts or the Volgites.
Yep, absolutely right, dude. And they also make you won't feel bad if you got a Forge Fiend or 2 now either. I think they're quite legitimate there, especially now they've got the 3+ Ballista skill. But you're absolutely right. Like they, because your melee isn't great, you need to have some level of shooting phase, and you're spot on, brother. I'm a huge fan of Rubrics. I think I love 5-man Rubric squads with a Soul Reaper cannon. Is that what it's called?
Yeah, it is. It's a 6 shot. I think it's a 6 shot.
Yep, strength 6 minus 3, 1 damage. It is so good. Good.
Oh, sorry. It's 5 shot. My apologies. 5 shot, 24 yep. inch, strength 6, neg 3, damage 1.
That rank 3.
You were saying something about needing to like trade a unit so that you can get like an optimal psychic phase. So like, how are you guys feeling about the Helldrake as like a, here, have this, you have to deal with it. If you don't, you know, you're going to have a bad time.
So Helldrake used to be, actually was like one of the T-Suns, you know, sorry, a really good play for a lot of reasons. It wasn't overly expensive. I think it was coming in like 120, 130 points. It wasn't a flyer. It wasn't like an aircraft, but it could fly. It would go, you know, 40 inches and declare a charge in a turn. Mm-hmm. And now it is a true aircraft. So if you deployed it on the table, you could go into hover and get your charge off and still do that stuff. Actually, can it charge non-aircraft stuff?
I believe it can yeah. Charge non-aircraft things.
Yeah, so as a disruption piece, I don't mind it. I still think it retains that role. And if you want to just, because it's not easy to kill. I mean, it's not exceptionally hard to kill, but it's not easy to kill. It's still like a good toughness, got an invul save and a bunch of wounds. And, you know, it's not that deadly. And so it's kind of like that Rhino, that Impulsor I was just talking about, where you're like, like, it's in your opponent's face, annoying them, but they're just like, ah, do I have to shoot multi-melters at this thing when he's got all those Scarab Occults over there? And like, I guess I gotta, you know, off you go. So that would feel good, wouldn't it?
Well, so it's a couple things. It's airborne, right? So it has to go into hover to lose the airborne. And I think that gives it the ability to charge. I don't want to say it.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
So one of the things I really like for T-Suns is Chaos Spawn. I think they, if you didn't want to take Scarab Occult Terminators, because they are very expensive, both in probably dollar redos and
points. So a unit, in this the sample list that I had, a unit of six Terminators, 245 points, which, you know, is probably at least 90 plus more points than Marine bodies, Heretical or Imperial, which you've said, Adam, and I agree with 100%, more than 90 points more than they want to be.
Yeah, it's very expensive. I mean, it's not bad by any means. You can make that unit do so much stuff. There's an upgrade for the Sorcerer that lets him do a psychic action, or lets him do an action, and the unit still gets to shoot, which is phenomenal. That unit, you know, can deep strike down, retrieve Octarius data for you, and still shoot. And the shooting is legit, especially with the Missile Racks and the Soulburner cannon. And they've got,
They're like trillion shot bolters.
There's still Ren 2 bolters, you know. There's nothing wrong with that. Four shots a pop. Actually, really, really legitimate. So, yeah, I think Scarab Occult, you know, it might not be for everybody. Might want to go, if you want to go more MSU, you don't want to have that big brick. I think Chaos Spawn are the way to go, because you can have a six-man unit for very cheap, very cheap. You've got a spell to give them a 4+ invulnerable save, and then you shoot them across the table. And you still got warp time, well, an equivalent of warp time, and you shoot them across the table, gum up your opponent, make them try and deal with them. Oh, they did deal with them. Guess what? You got another unit. Do the same thing. One psychic power to buff them up. One psychic power to shoot them over, and just gum them up again. I think that's really, it might be really key for T-Suns players. It just puts some pressure on your opponent where they live.
You look
and
at it as
four wounds, right?
Four wounds, toughness 5. Amazing with a 4+ involved.
That's so what I was going to say. You look at the point for point wound wise. Now, granted, Terminator's got 2+ save, so you know, different situations sometimes. But Chaos Spawn is 23 points apiece, and the Terminators are 40 points apiece.
Yeah, exactly right. So if you wanted that more MSU feel, I think, you know, 5-man rubrics with, you know, a couple units of, you know, whatever size, even just 3-man 3-man Chaos Spawn, some 3-man Zangoran Light, and you can still do that MSU style. You don't have like a Repentia equivalent. You don't have a Vanguard veteran equivalent, but you can still do some legitimate things. If you think about it like your Mortal Wounds is your melee, essentially. If you think about that and position yourself like that, it can kind of cover for that weakness.
I like that perspective. And in the Rhinos, let's not overlook the Rhinos. Rhinos can be turned into little gun platforms for Chaos Space Marines, but also a 1,000 Suns.
Absolutely. And that's so annoying. it feels so good when your opponent doesn't have a choice, but they're going to lose like 5 points on the primary if they don't target this Rhino, and you're just like, have to make you kill my Rhino.
And you might not even kill it.
Yeah. What happens if you just like, I'm going to pop smoke. See what happens. You could just roll bad.
Yeah. So I think that the 1,000 Suns they're going to be contender. Right? They're going to, what I like, similar to what we're talking about with the Grey Knights, is that if you're a 1,000 Suns collector, you can probably just jump right on the table with this new codex.
Exactly right. Yeah. Just get yourself an Infernal Master, which is their chaplain equivalent, if you want. I don't think he's a must take by any means, but he is pretty good. And off you go.
Yeah. And I mean, we talked about, you say Forge Fiends? I didn't dream that, did I?
Yeah. No. I don't mind a Forge Fiend or a Mauler Fiend. I think if you wanted to have a decent, you know, home field firebase, one or two, like you take two to three of any combination of Contemptors or Forge Fiends, and you're fine. They've got some great things to be able to give them rerolls now. They've got some great things to be able to give them, especially the Contemptors, because the Contemptors still have the core keyword for them. Give a lot of rerolls to them, especially from the Exalted Sorcerers who already come with that rerolls aura. Then they have I think they have a stratagem to give them an extra rend as well. So you get your Contemptor with Volkites to an extra rend, or rend 3 on all your Reaper Auto Cannons on the Forge Fiend. And the Forge Fiend having Ballista skill 3+ now, I can't, it's 150 points. It's not overly cheap, but that's sitting in a nice sweet spot where it's not too expensive either. And it's got a great profile for the game at the moment.
Yeah, I agree. So 1,000 Suns players, let us know what you're taking.
Yeah. And man, Grey Knights are in a really similar spot. Grey Knights are super exciting as well, but I've seen, I didn't hear a single T-Suns player complain when they got a new book. They were just like, finally, we can play mono T-Suns and not feel ultra restrictive about it. I did hear some Grey Knights players complain.
Really?
Interesting. Yeah.
What could they? I mean, look, I think the book is pretty solid, and it gets one of those to where if you had a bunch of strike squads and a Dread Knight, which I don't really know many Grey Knight players that didn't have two or three Dread Knights already, and then in strike squads that would do double duties like purifiers.
Yeah, exactly right. Like they're another one that don't have that many kits, and essentially they don't have anything to pick up for this new book. They can just literally plug and play.
Yeah, thing is though, and get on the table.
Exactly, it gets you new. Well, a lot of people have the old Crow, you know, whatever. Yeah. But you know, get the new Crow. That model is very very nice.
Oh,
but yeah,
like, I don't know if they listen to us or not. But that sword now has stats, and that makes me happy.
It does. Oh, does it have a rend?
Oh yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. The only time I was ever so that old Crow, the only thing I used to be able to do was it was so when GSC was really good in 8th edition, the old Castellan Crow was phenomenal because he essentially got to attack 3 times. He had like fight twice on his profile. Sorry, he got extra attacks for every time he dealt a wound, he'd generate more attacks. And then he could fight up to 3 times because he had fight twice and fight on death. And so when GSC was a big thing and people have these 30-man units of acolytes, you just like chuck him into a 30-man and he was 80 points and he just sort the problem out for him by himself. And it was hilarious because everyone was scratching their heads like, why is he there? And then people seeing it happen, they're just like, oh dear God, no. He's just gonna blend with no rend, and everyone's just like, oh, he's an absolute joke. And they're like, oh dear God, we don't have an armor save, this is horrific. And but yeah, the new one, a big fan. But dude, just like, sorry, Grey Knights, they're fine. They had this weird kind of House of Cards feeling about them before this book, where they had all these different layers of combos that were added on in different ways, like from Psychic Awakening, and then, you know, being one of the first codexes, they had a lot of different chapter approves and FAQs that their stuff went through. And now they've just got this nice, elegant, refined book. It doesn't have the depth of wonky stuff they used to be able to do, because I think G-Dub knew they needed to throw them a huge bone in Psychic Awakening to stop them from just falling off from the game completely. And they did. And they added a huge depth of jank and tech and weird wonky things that they could do that no one else could do.
Tides and that kind of stuff. Yeah,
yeah. And I think Grey Knight players lament the fact that they don't have all the super special things that they do that no one else did. Like the shoot then move in the psychic phase and stuff like that, which I think they still do have. So that's not a big deal. But there's a lot of... I think the biggest one people are lamenting is the change to Astral Aim and the fact that a lot of their units have set psychic powers now that they only target themselves, like strikes come with Hammer Hand. And so they're feeling a little bit more restricted in that way. But my God, the linear power.
Tell them to fall to chaos and Thousand Suns get to pick whatever they want.
Yeah, exactly right. But the straight line power. So that was what was wrong with the book before, yeah? They had some power. You could Death Star it probably better than anybody else could. Your Paladin Death Star was probably one of the best Death Stars in the game. And you could buff it to the dines. And now they're not. Now they play like another book. I think their power armor is where the strength is at. I don't think the Terminators or the Paladins hold up compared to what you can do with strikes, with purgation squads, especially with interceptors. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really exciting for people. I think that's something to be really excited about. You actually get to play with more than like 2 units in your army. And on top of that, the baby carrier is legit. It's legit.
The Dread Knight is what you're referring to.
The Dread Knight. That's exactly right.
Yeah, before we get too far away from Crow, I want to mention the Black Blade of Antwerp. It is +1 strength, -3 AP, 2 damage. Each time an attack is made with this weapon, an unmodified wound roll of 6 inflicts D3 mortal wounds on the target in addition to any normal damage. So he is coming. All those years of pent-up rage in that weapon is coming out with his 6 base attacks.
Ooh, he is pretty spicy, man. I like him a lot.
And his martial superiority at the start of the fight phase, if this model is within engagement range of any enemy character units, it can fight first at that phase. So he
never
is
a bad thing to have.
Yeah, pretty good. You know, if he hangs out, which he probably will, comes with a 2+ save, has 5 wounds apiece. And that blade has stats, and that makes me happy.
It's such an integral part of his fluff and story. It was just so silly, it did nothing.
That he didn't have a... Well, you know, look, all is forgiven.
Yeah. A new model washes away all sins.
New model and great stats on the sword that should have been. That's here we are. Because, you know.
I love it.
Yeah. Oh, well. Let's take a break. We'll come back. Talk more about this stuff. We also have a finishing move segment from Tanya. That we've talked about last week or last episode, and we're going to talk about that hobby segment at the end of the episode, so stay tuned.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
Hey everybody, we are back. I still got Tanya and Adam here.
Hello.
Please check out our sponsors. And I want to talk about something we're doing. We're helping promote this weekend the Nova Open Charitable Foundation Summer Raffles with some absolutely amazing things up. If you hear this, hopefully I'll get it out before raffle tickets close. They're beautiful collections, models, everything you need to play certain games is up there. It's a raffle system, so you buy raffle tickets, and the proceeds of those raffles go to some amazing charities.
I might have to put my hat in the ring for that Blackstone Fortress complete set.
When you say complete set, you mean every expansion that's ever been for Blackstone Fortress is
complete.
Right, yeah.
Yes. Amazing. And it's beautifully painted.
Yeah, painted by Guy from Midwinter Minis. It's his whole entire collection is up there. I mean, that's a very generous contribution to the raffle. There are some custodes from Duncan Rhodes that are up there.
Yeah, every year people just come out of the woodwork and just give to this this charity. It's been going for many years. And yeah, Paul and myself have been very honored and privileged to be a supporter of that. We usually hold a bit of a live raffle extravaganza for a couple of hours, which will be starting at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time on Saturday for everybody, 28th of August, this weekend coming.
That's it, 10 a.m. Eastern on August 28th until 1 p.m. when the raffles close. We're going to basically do a virtual event, close out this raffle, hopefully drive some enthusiasm, talk about some of the cool stuff that's up there. We'll be talking about 40K stuff, we'll talk about lore. You never know what's going to happen at these things. We haven't known what was going to happen at these things until it happens, but it's been a fun experience and really cool to bring awareness to these great causes. And one of the hallmarks of the event is that sometimes like groups of painters come together, and that's the same thing we've seen. There's an awesome World Eaters centric army that's up for raffle that has been contributed to by lots of incredibly well-known artists, and that enthusiasm and that just desire to make something cool is present in this. And there's a celebrity hiding in the mix there. There's Karn the Betrayer in that army. Donated by Dave from Indie Wargaming. His personal Karn the Betrayer.
Yeah, dude. It's absolutely incredible. Every year I chuck through a couple of bids here or there. Look, and the charity live event is a lot of just me and Paul drooling over the miniatures, wishing we would win this one, blah, blah, blah. I always bid on like two or three things every year. This year I'm going to be bidding on the Imperial Knights, because that's kind of something I'm interested in the moment. There's sweet, merciful everything. There are so many good models on display this year. It is jaw-dropping. And maybe it's a symptom that people were stuck inside a bit more, that they had more time to produce some of this stuff. But look, there's like, if you want an excuse to start an army, winning some of these miniatures is a perfect excuse. There's a couple of there's a beautifully painted Abaddon, Sister Amalia. There is the Catachan Colonel, which you can't get that guy. That Catachan Colonel is so hard to get. Why not get yourself one that's incredibly painted?
Like, I love that camo scheme they've got there. Yeah,
it's phenomenal.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, they've got some busts as well. And so, on top of that, one of the things I always love is that there's a lot of really unique experiences that are up for raffles as well. Like there's a mini wargaming bunker trip, 5 days, 4 nights accommodation at the mini wargaming bunker, $10 a raffle. Chuck $10 in. Maybe you get yourself a holiday. Like, and there's phenomenal painters as well, giving one-on-one painting classes up for raffle as well. So jump in, like everything to win. And it's all going to amazing causes.
Yeah. I know we're talking about like pictures and that's like the worst for radio. So I'm cognizant of that. So thanks for bearing with us. But like you just mentioned, the causes that this benefits, and it's cool. Like I know the Charitable Foundation has been acknowledged for their contributions to these charities. So it's meaningful to them, and it's really cool to see the community, the artist, and the folks that are getting the tickets really come together for what is a common goal and cool things for humanity. And I've loved seeing it. I love being a part of it in the small way of we're talking about it, you know. But it's still the awareness and the funds that it's bringing to these extremely worthwhile charities. You know, it's really warming to see.
Exactly right. And look, some of these pieces are, you know, one of a kind, absolutely one of a kind, done by some of the best artists out there. Like you really. So I won the what was the the Warcry Squig army. I won that.
Warhammer Underworlds.
Yeah, I won the Underworlds Squig faction last year in the raffle, and I donated it lovingly to a local FLGS, and they've been training people, you know, letting people play on that as for their intro games. But yeah, that kind of stuff, you know, it's not a game that I play, but I was able to pass it on, and now new players are getting to use beautifully, like, top inspiration. I just think about if I was a new player walking in playing with those miniatures and just being so enamored and looking at that stuff in with awe, and I just, yeah, I love that.
I cited you as an example earlier. Someone asked me, he's like, can I get this anywhere in the world? I'm like, yes, and I know someone who has. It's on the actual other side of the world.
Yeah, I got it sent beautifully packaged. Zero breakages from one literal one side of the earth to the other. Zero breakages. Can't say enough about this. That kind of service is phenomenal.
Yeah, and look, the reality is that very few people are going to actually win these things, and so it's that's the cool upside. Like, you get to do something, you get to kick into some cool charities, and you might win something. But especially if you got your eye on something, you want a centerpiece, you want something to sit on your shelf and just look cool. You want, in some cases, it's everything you need to play XYZ game.
Mm-hmm.
And you have the means. This is not a hard sell. If you actually have the means to do it, then kick in, and it's for a good cause.
Absolutely.
That's my hard sell. Let's talk about hobby stuff.
I would love it.
Yeah, so this Finishing Moves segment is one that we've done routinely in the past. We're going to try to bring it back, where we talk about some low time investment, big dramatic effect type things on your miniature. If you just spent 5-10 more minutes on whatever miniature you're working on, you might be able to come away with some really amazing effects, things you had not considered before, things you did not think might have been within reach before. We're going to try to explain some of those things. So if you haven't heard the segment before, we try to go walk through some steps about how to achieve these really cool effects on maybe a miniature that you thought was done, or you thought that you had maxed out on. We're going to suggest maybe one more step, one more thing. Mm-hmm. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Tanya.
All right. So what if I told you that you could paint realistic looking lights with one paint and one wash?
Tell me more.
Like, shut up.
Yeah.
I've been ruining headlights for like a decade.
All right. So all you need in order to paint headlights is a white paint, your favorite white paint, and Cassandora yellow wash. That's it. And how do you do it? So you do a nice solid base coat of white on the entire headlight. And oftentimes headlights you'll see are actually recessed inside of some sort of framework.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So what you want to do is you want to cover all of the light. So you want to make sure that you get the white paint into the crevices around the frame and the light. So you fill it all in with white. White's a little bit tricky to work with, so I do suggest two thin coats. But then once that white is dry, you use the Cassandora yellow wash. And, you know, don't be shy with it. You just put it all around. You want it to, again, sink into those sort of recesses around the outside of the light. Once that is dry, you take the same white paint and you just water it down a little bit. And you don't want a sopping brush, so you want to, like, wipe out a majority of the paint onto a paper towel, just so that you can see that it's still barely wet with paint. And then you just glaze a little bit of the white along the middle, like the center of the light, and then you leave that yellow ring around the outside. And then I just do a couple layers of that sort of watery layer. So the first one is a little bit bigger, and then the second one is just like a more concentrated hit of white into like the very center of the light, and then you're done.
So a glaze to be, I'm gonna play the audience for a second.
Sure.
You don't mean a wash. It's a different property.
It's like a
right?
technique. Yes. So glazing, the technique, is basically taking your regular paint that you would normally use and you thin it down a little bit. So in this case, for these lights, it's almost a one-to-one, but you don't want to put like a lot of paint onto the surface. You just want just a little bit of paint on there so you can almost see the yellow through the white that you're putting on top. And that's a glaze.
I love how you call it, you're an artist, you call it a technique. I would call them cheats. You're on the.
I actually feel really strongly about that. You know, like, I think that there's a lot of people who feel that their hobby isn't good enough, or like they don't do it the same way as other people, and so therefore it's somehow wrong or cheating. But it's not. It's a technique. It's your process. And I think if everybody sort of like embraced their process a little bit, they would feel a lot better about their hobby and a lot better about their unique style as well.
I love that. Well, very well said. Question for you, Tanya. What's your go-to white? Because a lot of people out there, I know, struggle with white, struggle with getting, you know, an opaque finish. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I painted like, I've got 3,000 points of black Templars, and I didn't airbrush any of the white. I literally like base coated with to get like a solid gray, and then glazed white layers till I got it somewhere that wasn't chalky, and mixed results. I got to tell you. So what's your go-to white?
I really like Monument Hobbies Pro Acryl Bold Titanium White. It comes nice and thin in the bottle, and it stays nice and thin no matter how long you've had this pot of paint. It comes with an agitator inside the bottle as well. So as long as you shake it up good, like it doesn't get chunky or anything like that. It is still a white, and whites, because the pigments are not ground as finely. If you have any drying on the brush, it's just not going to apply very smoothly. So if you are painting white or light colors, just make sure that you're washing your brush quite a bit and keeping it moist as you're applying that paint. And then you shouldn't have as many problems with texture.
I found all those black Templars I was talking about, I did all that before I discovered wet palettes as well, and I think a wet palette is very necessary if you want to paint a lot of white anywhere.
I would tend to agree. I use a wet palette almost exclusively. I just think, well, I also live in a desert, so it's very, very dry, and it just keeps my paint workable for me while I'm using it. But with whites and light colors and the nature of the pigment, like, you need to keep them moist. You need to keep your brush moist. I actually use quite a large brush while I'm painting whites and stuff. So it just keeps the paint workable, but make sure to clean your brush lots.
You mentioned Cassadore Yellow specifically. Could you use other colors of the same, like, consistency to get a similar effect with a different color?
I think you probably could. I just find that Cassadore Yellow just looks like headlights.
There you go. Okay.
Yeah. It just looks like an incandescent light. I just think it looks the most sort of lifelike, I guess.
Those light effects, they go a long way on the model. I mean, it's one of those that looks great from 3 feet away.
Absolutely. Mm. Yeah, you don't even have to do a particularly spectacular job for it to look really good on the table.
So what you just described, though, was like getting a very solid base coat, then just using either a glaze or a wash. It's pretty much the contrast method. Like, it is the contrast method of painting.
You know, you probably could use contrast instead of Cassadore Yellow. I have a bottle of Cassadore Yellow, so I haven't needed to like branch out into other things. Yeah. But I think you probably could do the exact same thing with contrast.
Nice. Good to know.
There you go. Maybe you may have to play with the consistency some. I have found that the contrast, for me, I love the paint. It's a tool, though. Like, you've got to use it in whatever way is appropriate to what you're actually trying to do. And sometimes, like, I'm really looking forward to, I've got an idea of when I finally get some of my Adeptus Auratus on the table, of doing like metal as the base coat and then going over it with contrast black.
Ooh.
I've seen a couple of really cool tutorials out there, and I've got one that I'm gonna, like I mentioned, I'm a tutorial fiend, gotta find. I think I've found a method with this that they've explained that will work for me to try to get a neat effect. And I'm kind of like, I go through different stages of confidence when I'm painting black. And they're never very high on the confidence scale, but I feel like I can get an effect that I'm looking for, and different than other, like my Death Company, for instance, or my first company, Luna Wolves, is this kind of metal undercoat, and then using that contrast to give me that kind of shiny effect.
I gotta say, I have seen that technique used on Alpha Legion before, and it looks fantastic. Like, not using black, but like using that kind of is it Talisar blue? No, the one that's a little bit more green.
Aethermantic, or I don't. There's
There's so many weird names, but like, you know, the color that I'm talking about.
I do
right?
know. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it just looked absolutely phenomenal over the metallic base coat. So I'm excited to see what you come up with, Paul.
Well, yeah, we'll see. But you know, with the, like you mentioned the contrast, but also the washes, sometimes they're just that you can get them right out of the pot and use them until you start like, I know. And they just kind of do what you want. So even if you weren't, you hadn't mastered your glaze technique yet, you probably still get a cool effect just with the solid base coat that you were talking about, and then just the Gazzantara yellow.
The other thing that you could do if you don't feel comfortable glazing is you can do the white base coat, you can put the Cassandora yellow on top, and then with a damp brush, you can just remove some of the Cassandora yellow from the highest point of the lens, and then it maybe would give you something pretty close to the same effect.
There you go. Let's see what people come up with. Well, folks, that's our show this week. You've heard this before. Time for the Nova Open Charitable Foundation raffles, and you're able to get in there at least some. Look, if you can't, even if you can't contribute for some tickets right now, completely understand. Come check us out on the live stream. It'll be on the Nova Open Twitch channel.
Yeah, join in. It's a, you know, like you'd see a charity show. You know, remember growing up, you see a charity thing, and there'd be a panel of people answering calls live and stuff.
That's us.
That's us. The more interaction we get with you guys, the better the content is. And, you know, we'll hype this thing up to the nth degree if we can. And it's all for an amazing cause. So thanks very much for everybody who has or is or will contribute.
There's always been a push there at the end. We hope to be part of that momentum again. And we hope y'all are part of that momentum. And yeah, it's exciting. I know that they're able to send out some funds to some areas that really need it, you know, right now, especially, you know, with everything that's going on in the world.
Yeah, a lot of people hurt.
Yeah, it's nice to be a part of that. Thank you all for being a part of it. Thank you all for listening. Please do not forget to like, share, and subscribe. Leave us some 5-star reviews. That is a really hassle-free way to interact with the show. Let us know, and also help other. Let us know you like what you're hearing, but also let people find us, because that kind of makes the algos do what the algos do, and other people get to listen to the show that way.
Gotta love those algos.
We're gonna try to try to keep them happy. And Adam and Tanya, we'll see y'all next week.
Love your work, guys. See you then.
Culture crafting. Soon.
Dun, dun, dun. Press is on.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
All right.
Horseback scan is clear. I think they're gone, for now.